Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones podcast. I am your mini boss, Alex Rigsby, and I'm joined today by, in dungeon number one, Brian Taylor.
Hey, how's it going?
In dungeon number two, Will Coleman.
Hey, did we vote on dungeons? Because why am I two? Why am I not one? I don't know. Whatever. Hi.
Like I said, in last place, Will Coleman.
And that's worse.
And in dungeon number three, we have Chelsea Alberta.
I don't whine about what dungeon I'm in.
And that's why you're number three. ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for episode number one of the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones. We're here today to wrap up all the video game news that you know about already, but we're going to give it like a little bit of a different spin, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you've already heard people saying these exact same words in this exact same combination 500 times, but maybe you're just lonely and you just really want human connection. I don't know, but you're going to get it today from our voices. Maybe, probably. Probably not. I don't know, but keep listening anyway. First off, as we begin every episode, let's go ahead and find out what everyone's been playing. Mr. Brian Taylor, what have you been playing?
All right. So recently, I've actually been playing Paper Mario Origami King. You know how it is.
No, I don't.
I've really been getting into that.
Never heard of it. What is that game?
You said that you hadn't gotten into it yet, but you know, I really like it. I know there's a lot of controversial stuff going on with like the combat. It's not really like the original Paper Mario games. It's not even really like Sticker Star or Color Splash, and it's got this weird like bullseye rotate the enemies kind of combat system, and it's very interesting, and I like it. I don't know. It's puzzle combat, and I think that's really neat that they did that. Plus, the story is really enjoyable. The characters are really fun. It's really funny. It doesn't really try that hard to be funny, but it managed to do it well anyways, which I think is surprising. It's just not like in your face about it, like I felt like some of the recent entries in the series were. And on my PlayStation, I've been playing Ghost of Tsushima. Beautiful, beautiful game. Love the combat. Love the story. Love the style. It really is odd how well they took the Infamous series and like turned it into a samurai game. Because you can see a lot of the hint of inspiration from the animations and stuff like that. And just the way that you can use your attacks and stuff. But no, it really works so very, very well. And I know a lot of other people have been playing it as well. But yeah, I'm only about maybe 15 hours into it. So just sort of getting into the meat of what the game is really about. But I'm really enjoying it, really enjoying the photo mode too.
Well, and Ghost of Tsushima, of course, is a direct sequel to Sushi Striker on the 3DS.
It is, surprisingly. You know, when I went into it, I thought I saw a couple familiar characters from that franchise, but I didn't really know their role, and I thought it was a little gritty the way that they chose to have those characters die. But either way, you know, I felt like they really did a good job with that.
Right, and looking forward to Tsushima being number two in the Fighter Pass for Super Smash Brothers. I actually don't know the character's name in that game, so I'm just going to call him Tsushima. I assume that that's the place. That's where it takes place, right? Is that a historical battle?
In Japan?
Yes, I don't know. What is Tsushima a reference to?
I don't know. It sounds like a fictional place where all you do is eat sushi. I'm not really sure.
Hey, you're playing the game. Is it not referenced?
No, it's directly... It's it's the area, it's what it's all about. No, why did you reference the sushi ninja character though? It's an island. It's an island of the Japanese archipelago.
Okay.
Archipelago. That's the one. That's the English lesson I needed. Thank you.
Gotta get back into the classroom. Sorry, Brian.
Yeah. insert ridiculously loud cough.
Don't go back into the class.
I have no words for that.
We're avoiding classrooms a lot right now.
The irony is strong with this one.
Well, I mean, so it sounds pretty good. Obviously, Sony doing a real good job cranking out. I mean, this has been a pretty big year for Sony in terms of games that they announced in 2017. I'm halfway joking, but also seriously, like, they announced those games a long time ago, but like every few months now, they've consistently been releasing like blockbuster 10 out of 10 hits. Just like, but these were games that were announced a long time ago. So I guess everything all just is kind of lining up now in terms of, like, I don't know how long development of Ghost of Tsushima was, but it feels like it's been in development for a while. Because what, that weird E3 where the guy with the flute came out and played for 10 minutes, that was at least 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, and that's when they also showcased Part 2. Of The Last of Us. It was literally the same conference. So they had all that going on at the same time. It was... I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Maybe I'm mistaken. I think that's what happened.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that's the same one. But what's weird is... Is that also when they were showing off God of War?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so... Those took a huge leap. But... You know what? I feel like the quality that they released is just all three of those games just really ended up to be that high end quality that you can appreciate and see like every detail of how much effort they put into it in the end.
Right.
So it's crazy how much a difference, you know, of God of War releasing, you know, that much sooner than those other two titles.
Right.
But yeah, either way, I mean, God of War was 2018 and both those came out in 2020. So a 2 year difference. And when God of War came out, I mean, people thought the production values were through the roof. And then to see these other two games like pumping out what looks like next gen graphics in the current generation of systems, it just, that seems like it's what always happens with these consoles and with these games. It's like they finally get to the point where they can push out the next generation of graphics out of it, and surprise, time for a new system.
Well, and that's what Sony's really good at too. I mean, they did the same thing with The Last of Us on PS3, and I mean, like you already pointed out, like Infamous, obviously that last Infamous game, I would say, I mean, I'd have to go back and play it, I guess, but I remember Infamous 2, not the last one, I guess, but Infamous 2, the last one that was on PS3, looking really spectacular. But I don't know, maybe, I mean, like, I also misremember how PS3 games looked until I hook up a PS3 again, and then I'm like, ugh. I don't know.
What's really crazy is that if you really go back and look at Killzone Shadowfall, like, pretty sure that was a launch title, right? It came out with the PlayStation 4. And you look at the graphics of that game, I've seen so many other games this generation that don't even live up to the graphics that they pushed out for Killzone Shadowfall. Like, it's insane to me to see that. And that came out in 2013.
Right.
So that's just bonkers to me to see that. But that also gave them that much time. I mean, if you think about, that's when it launched, with 2013, and now we're 2020. That's 7 years. That's such a long time, and graphics capability and what they're able to do with, you know, the different engine technologies. So,
well, I mean, really, I mean, Guerrilla is clearly just kind of on a whole level other than everyone else, like above everyone else when it comes to like graphical fidelity, it seems. But also, I mean, in terms of Killzone, when you're talking about that versus something like, you know, Spider-Man or Ghost of Tsushima or Last of Us. I mean, not even Last of Us, I guess, but the fact that Killzone Shadowfall, yes, I mean, it was gorgeous, but also it being a little bit more of a linear thing, you could see that, like, yeah, you're right, it looked gorgeous, but it was, you know, a different thing than than Spider-Man, for example.
Right, but they also made Horizon Zero Dawn, which is easily one of the best-looking games on the
PlayStation
4. And I mean, I felt like they started on a high note, and then they just kept going. And then with what they showed for the PlayStation 5 with the new Horizon, I'm really looking forward to that, too, just to see what they're able to do with it, because they really seem to be redefining what you can do with a video game engine and what you're able to put out on a console.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Guerrilla's an interesting one. Obviously, with Forbidden West, it's going to look insane. And, you know, with no load times, I'm sure, on PS5, it's going to be pretty wild what they're going to be able to do with that. But, I mean, also part of me kind of wonders, and maybe this is as someone who didn't super get into Horizon Zero Dawn. I mean, I recognize that it's a fantastic game and a lot of people loved it. You know, it was in a lot of people's like top five games of the year at minimum. That was also the year that Breath of the Wild came out. So I think it got snubbed a little bit by some people. But like on top of that, I guess my next question would be like, where does Guerrilla go from here? Like, do they ever branch out into like a new IP after the next Horizon game, or do they just keep making Horizon games? Do they go back to Killzone?
I mean, that was a nice pun that you put in there. I mean, swing to the next branch, I guess, right? I don't know what they could possibly do. I'd love to see another Killzone. I felt like Killzone 3 wasn't really good for me. But so much of the stuff that just like the gameplay elements that they introduced in a launch title for the PlayStation 4 really cemented what they were able to do, especially the multiplayer. The multiplayer was really engaging, having the different classes and stuff that they eventually added through DLC. And I'm not really sure. I mean, I think they're going to do gangbusters with what they're going to release for the next Horizon, but I'm not sure to really be able to anticipate what they could do beyond that.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. We will be keeping a close eye on that one. Brian Taylor, anything else you've been playing?
Not really, no. But basically just going back and forth between those two games as of late. I have a couple other games that I have my eye on, but I haven't got them yet.
Okay. Well, we'll be checking back in with you periodically throughout whatever period of time we'll be checking in on
you. That seems fair. That seems relative.
I don't know. Maybe I'll just show up at midnight tonight and see what you're up to and just start recording.
You know, it always
again.
Feels like somebody's watching me, you know?
I do know.
Okay.
Better.
Speaking of Will, Mr. Will Last Place Coleman, what have you been what have you been up to?
Well, because this year sucks, I've been playing Dying Light, which came out several years ago. And that's a fun game. It's a good time.
Yeah, it seems very relevant to the current times.
It is, and no better time for co-op games than when you can't see friends.
Right. Especially games where you are, I mean, I'm assuming you're fighting for your life, survival, horror type thing, lots of Karen-esque creatures you're having to fight off.
They all died. They didn't wear the mask. They all died. Yep.
You're playing, you know, you're getting ready for the sequel coming out, of course, right?
Yes. Yeah, so they got the sequel coming out, and then they have a DLC that they're releasing in a couple weeks. So that's kind of nice that they keep supporting it.
What's the DLC?
Hellraid. So I think it's like a medieval sort of dungeon, hell-inspired. I don't know if it's like a dungeon type match or it looks like it's smaller. It doesn't look like it's a whole open world for you to explore, but I don't know. It looks fun.
So what
Wait a second. How is that not just Hellgate London? How is that not exactly what that is?
That's totally
what it looks like. Do you remember that game? Hellgate London.
I know that they released. Didn't they have a? They had something they were working on. I don't know if it ever got released, but it's supposed to be like adapted into the game like that. Yeah.
Yeah, because this is Techland, but Hellgate London was done by Flagship Studios.
Okay.
But they also worked with Electronic Arts, so.
They had a game called Hellraid that was supposed to come out, I think, on Steam before Dying Light, and never happened. And so this is like them adapting it to Dying Light World.
Yeah, just adding it to it. That's cool. That's,
right.
It looks really
neat. They never made it out, so.
That looks really cool, though.
Wait, so Brian, are you implying that EA ripped off one of its other studios and threw something into this game, or what are you saying with that?
Well, Dying Light, is that an EA game?
Doubtful, because people actually like it, so
I think it's just independent.
It's Techland,
so that's Warner
all,
Brothers.
This is all of them.
Okay.
But no, I mean, Hellgate London was a neat concept. It was really bad. Like, because I remember playing on the servers, playing the multiplayer stuff there, and it did not work. it was you could play it offline or you could play it online without a subscription fee at the time. But then you could pay a monthly fee to get additional content like areas, monsters, weapons, whatever. So just like the like a battle pass kind of thing, or like a DLC pack.
But
all of the acts together were only like 40 hours of gameplay for single player, but then you could go online and do like all that stuff with friends or people that you don't know that like to scream in your ear. Just any number of options there.
Right.
But no, that game is really old.
2007.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Of the perils of video game voice chat.
Yeah, it wasn't great, and that was. I remember it was like one of the first games that I played that had the Games for Windows like logo on it, and it was just absolute trash. I remember another one that they had was the Halo 2. I think it was Halo 2 Vista. The Halo 2 PC translation mm-hmm. that was supposed to work with all the multiplayer and stuff, and it wasn't very good. But
right, and I was actually just researching this the other day because Halo 3 came out on Steam, I think, last week.
I think it was last week. I didn't get a chance to play it yet. I have it, but I didn't get a chance to give it a go.
Right. Well, no. So I was researching all the Halo games to see when they came out on PC. And yeah, I had no idea. I completely missed the fact that Halo 2 had been released on Vista, like, I don't know, a year after its original Xbox release or something. But then it just, you know, unless you had a Vista PC, you couldn't play that thing, apparently. Am I right? Like,
yeah, so there was eventually a way that we figured out how to get around it. Because we were all modders back then in the Halo 1 PC scene.
Right,
so
we were
out how to sort of to get around that whole restriction. But yeah, for the most part, they wanted you to buy Vista to be able to play it. And then we created a custom launcher to make it work. Which brings me to another point, just talking about Halo in general. I mean, I'm sure that's something that's going to come up later on in this episode. But
Halo
Online... Dude. Was a free-to-play first-person shooter that was basically Halo 3 multiplayer, but it was Russian only. And they had a fan-made mod that was called El Du Rito, and it allowed the game to be played worldwide. So basically what they were doing was they took this Russian-only Halo 3 multiplayer game that... was specifically for that, and they changed it so everybody could play it. And it included the Forge mode and all the other stuff, all the multiplayer modes that they had, but no single player at all. So they basically had a Halo 3 online for a pretty long time.
did eventually get pulled or something?
Well, the Russian one got canceled. They had a closed beta for it in 2015, and then it was supposed to launch in 2016, but it got canceled, and that's when they made the mod after the cancellation of 2016.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's crazy to think that, I mean, specifically talking about when was that available for PC, they wouldn't make a game that was Halo 3 for PC, but they made the multiplayer for it. So it's just really strange how they went about that. Really silly that it ended up being Russian only, you know?
Right. The one thing that Halo 3 and Devil's Third have in common is that there was a PC only multiplayer exclusive mode. So in a way you could say that Halo 3 was the prequel to Devil's Third.
That's what I would say.
I mean,
I had a say in the matter, of course.
Halo 3, Devil's Third, Three's Company, we'll just say.
Didn't they call Master Chief the Devil in Halo 3? So, I mean, Half-Life 3 confirmed, right?
True. True.
Best argument I've heard yet.
Right. Well,
maybe they called him the Demon. That's pretty close, though, right? I mean, tomatoes, oranges, whatever you want to call them.
I'll call them neither of those things.
It's clearly an avocado.
Because
unlike
Will, I don't make smoothies in the middle of podcasts.
Using my car.
Yeah, that was weird. I'm glad that none of you heard the pre-show and got to listen to Will making smoothies loudly. But anyway,
Friday nights, but I don't judge.
Other than Dying Light, right?
Right. Yeah, other than Dying Light, Will Coleman, and making random zombie smoothies, what have you been up to?
Well, you know, still Animal Crossing. Every day, Animal Crossing. Got to get those bells. Got to get those shells. That
right,
wasn't supposed to rhyme, but it did.
When you were actually late to the Animal Crossing party, correct? You got it like a month or two after it
you were late
I
to
was,
cross over.
But I caught up, baby. I'm back. 8 million bells in the bank. What you
oh,
coming
wow.
for?
Nice.
That's pretty good. I don't know that I ever amassed that much wealth in Animal Crossing. So you're doing
seems
better.
Seems like
than
you
I
had a lot of bells turn up.
Oh, somebody's got the pun game on.
Or will the bell tolls?
Ooh, that's going to be my podcast name. I'm going to take
that. That's even further of a stretch than mine was.
Animal Crossing broke me after I was an idiot and bought like 3 or 4 inventories full of turnips and then forgot to sell them.
Oh
no.
I was just like, you know what? Maybe it's one of those moments where like the simulation sort of breaks for a minute and you're like, what am I doing?
Oh no, my virtual crops.
Basically.
That are worth millions.
If you cried over virtual crops, I think it's sort of taken it to a new level.
It's so much work.
Exactly.
And
now I feel guilty. If I go back now, all the villagers are going to like be like, hey, we missed you. You didn't come out of your house for 2 months.
They're all covered in weeds. They have like
moved.
Weed clothes that they made.
Oh, what they have
to commemorate the fact
right.
that you left.
I'm going to find a grave by my house.
Dead to us. You're dead to us.
Animal Crossing is a very specific type of game if they all have weed clothes. And I don't know how
I'm
I
sure
feel
someone's
about
done it.
It's 420 somewhere,
sure
Alex.
They probably... I don't know. Nintendo's eventually going to update it and add a 420 event, I'm sure. That's the current landscape of the way things are going.
Landscape... Hey-o.
Hey, my town is dead.
Bring it all back around.
By the way, I don't know if you can hear that, but there is currently a cat very angry in the background that she's not a part of this.
She's upset that she wasn't invited to the podcast.
Yeah.
But other than that, I can't hear her, so I think we're okay.
Okay. Well, just wanted to make sure you were aware. These are unusual times we're living in, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone's recording everything out of their apartments, as if we weren't already doing that anyway. But obviously, we can't all be fancy IGN people or Jimmy Fallon. But it was kind of fun for a while getting to watch all of them kind of struggle in the way that your average day YouTuber or podcaster has to. So that was nice.
Oh, yeah. Watching that whiplash was so funny as they were like trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Jimmy's back to his normal set. So
I appreciate how John Oliver just was like, you know what, I'm going to give up and just, you know, go to the afterlife.
Pretty much.
So he's doing all of his stuff with just that bright white background.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing like.
I think
no
that's
laugh
smart.
Track.
Yeah.
I think that's smart. At a certain point, John Oliver can, you know, if you green screened him, then eventually he would just blend in and fade out of existence entirely with a white background like that. So.
Well, I also just mean like Trevor Noah has sort of done more of what YouTubers already do with like jump cuts and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I think John Oliver might have looked at YouTube and been like, nah.
Right.
I'm good. Incapable of that.
Right. Yeah.
I was on Community. I don't have to put up with this.
Did you see that they announced G4 is coming back? I'm sorry. That's probably a whole different meal.
No, we will get into that. We will get into that. But Will Coleman, anything else you've been playing?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Two's enough.
Two's enough. Three's a crowd.
Animal Double. Light and Dying Crossing. Got it.
Right.
Yes.
Devil's Third. Halo
that's
3.
That's the last time you're going to bring that up. Do not say Devil's Third again.
In Devil's Dungeon Third, Chelsea Alberta. what have you been up to lately?
I've been playing Pokemon Cafe. I think it's technically called, I think the full title is like Pokemon Cafe Mix. So that's what I've been playing.
I think you just heard Will audibly groan there because he forgot that he was also playing Pokemon Cafe.
It was like a squeal. Like a half squeal.
Okay. Well, so you know, you guys, what are your thoughts on Pokemon Cafe?
So
I'm guessing the person
playing it should probably give us some
information. I was gonna say yes, the two of you that played it, Brian immediately speaks up. Let me tell you about my thoughts on the
Well,
trailer.
I do have an experience, but I'll let Chelsea go first because she's in third dungeon.
So the actual puzzling is fine. I was kind of disappointed because every like five or so, I guess it's more like every 10 or so puzzles, every now and then they'll try to add in like a new difficult thing to the puzzle. And so they'll have like ice blocks and they'll have like blocks of honey, blocks of caramel, because it's a cafe thing, except that they are all the same thing. And you approach them the exact same way. There's like three types of things that can get in your way. And they pretend that there's like 15 by calling them 15 different names.
So it's Candy Crush all over again.
But yeah, but then again, every time I think I'm about to get bored with it, a new Pokemon joins my cafe and I get to see the incredibly charming outfit that they wear. And I'm there again. that's what I care about. I was very excited to get, I think it... Train Conductor Pikachu is one of the ones you can get. But I was most excited. I'm trying to get Sobble to help me, to come be a sad boy behind the counter and help make like parfaits and stuff.
Sobble just seemed like he'd be a bad employee. Always doing the weed behind the back of the cafe or maybe that's Drizzile that I'm thinking
Sobble,
of.
Yeah, boy, he'd be crying behind the cafe.
Okay, well, so basically, I mean, Sobble basically goes through, okay, he's like the really sad child, and then he becomes emo teen, and then he just becomes full-on like sniper. Assassin. Yeah, like an assassin at the end. So like, he goes through some stuff is all I have to say. But also, I mean, there's got to be some kind of regulation against Sobble working at your cafe then at that point, right? Like,
there's any regulations at all in the cafe. Every time my cafe has wanted to expand, my assistant just literally leans out the building and yells at a group of timber and asks them to come over and build something, and then pays them with free lunch. So I don't think there's any regulations for anything.
So what you're saying is Pokemon is just the Wild West in terms of child labor laws.
Basically.
Okay.
Basically.
Socialism.
I mean, come on. How strict of, like, protective laws is a world built entirely on, like, glorified dogfighting gonna, like, how progressive are those care laws gonna be?
Right. The world of Pokemon, a libertarian's dream. I believe that's actually a subtitle for Red and Blue, if you look back. So
for all those Poke Centers.
Right. Now, but this is a free-to-play game, right?
Yes, which means I have spent some money in it.
just get right to that's point. Not by necessity what that means, but okay.
It's what it feels like. It's one of those where, like, you can lose and restart a level a certain amount of times before you're stuck on a timer because you're for lives, for lack of a better term, take about 10, I think, minutes to reset. So if you burn through 5 lives, which is the max you can get, you got to wait at least 10 minutes to have even one more shot at something. Or you can keep putting money into the game to keep getting turns to prolong whatever level you're on and avoid losing that life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Free to start.
Yeah, yeah. It's free to play, so eventually it's pay to win.
Right, right. Okay. Do you find that it is appropriately monetized, or do you feel like it's like a little overpriced for what you're actually getting from the microtransactions?
I feel like it's very well priced and stuff. And to be honest, I say it's pay to win, but someone who was actually good at puzzle games could probably get a lot farther than I have before they spent any money. I don't have a, like, I'm not naturally really good at puzzles. So.
Right. Right. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty good at puzzle games. I'm not like the Tetris master or anything, for example. Brian and I have extensively played Tetris Effect and Tetris 99 and all that good stuff, and Brian is quite good at Tetris, but like, well, and
I'm
so
verified.
Like,
I am a verified Tetris master, thank you very much.
Are you really?
I think it was on Tetris 99 because,
okay,
I won. And
okay,
it says,
fair,
you're like a verified Tetris master or something.
Well, there you
so
go.
I was like, I took my award and I ran with it.
You get the certificate if you hook up your Game Boy printer to the Switch dock. And
yeah, it is proudly displayed on my wall.
Right, right.
Right next to my CVS receipts.
Right, of course. I really like Panel de Pond, like Puzzle League, that type of stuff. That's one of my favorite puzzle games. Like the Pokemon Puzzle League type stuff. And what's one of the more recent ones? Like, Brian actually showed me Lumines a few years ago, and that's pretty fun. I mean, the rhythm based puzzle games are really cool. But this, like Brian said, this kind of seems more like a, like in the Candy Crush sort of vein, just in watching you play a little bit.
Well, I was just specifically saying that because, like, they introduce a new candy, but it like overall doesn't really do anything. It's the same thing, just a different appearance. That's what,
sure,
I meant, yeah, by the reference to Candy Crush, because that's basically,
sure,
what they did. They were like, here's a oblong blue one as opposed to an orange one. Like, it was just like random stuff that they would throw in there, like, yeah, new level. I'm
right.
So excited.
Right. Yeah.
But Will was playing this game as well. Does Will input?
Yeah, Will, what are your...
You lost me for a second because Pokemon Cafe is what I call when I set up my plushies in the kitchen and I make little coffee drinks. But no, I have played the Switch game too, and it is fun. That's not my only input. I think it's great. I love the little outfits.
Exactly, the little outfits. You think you're not going to play anymore because you think it's a puzzle game, and then you get tired of the puzzle game, and then Eevee comes out, and it's adorable. It's a little tie bear,
yep,
that even fits. It's so cute.
In walks Mancino, and I'm just
Exactly.
I want to mock you, but then again, I've been playing Ninjala and getting the cosmetic items and wanting to make sure that my my little ninja guy has the prettiest face mask that he can possibly have. So
exactly.
No, I can't really.
You can't. After you nitpicked the one mask that you got, you cannot get onto us for aesthetics.
Can't. Well, I do have some input about the game, but it's not from me actually playing it. Jessica, my wife, said that she wanted to try to play the game, and she was like, Pokemon Cafe seems fun, whatever. And I downloaded it for her, and we started it up, and it's like touch screen. And she was like, nope, I'm good. So she had me uninstall it like immediately afterwards, because she almost exclusively plays on the television through the Switch dock. So she didn't even really give it a fair try. And I know it's on mobile as well, but I haven't seen her install it on there yet. But that's pretty much my entire experience with Pokemon Cafe Mix, is that because it's touchscreen, which is sort of a weird premise. I mean, everybody's so used to Joy-Cons and everything else, that it's weird to have a touchscreen only game. And I know some rhythm games do that, but it's like they sort of shoehorned it into a Switch game because they originally intended it specifically to be mobile.
Well, you know, and I kind of wonder if they're going to add Joy-Con support at some point in the future. But that's kind of like what the Pokemon company has been doing with a lot of things, I feel like, in the past few years. Like that Pokemon Quest game that was a free-to-play game, you know, that eventually came to mobile too. It started out like it was originally on Switch exclusive for like 2 months or something, but it eventually came to mobile, and there was no reason that that thing couldn't run on mobile. It was almost entirely touch based. So like, I feel like that's kind of been Pokemon Company's philosophy recently with a lot of stuff, is to just kind of like, hey, we're going to make a bunch of mobile games, and then like in between, we're going to throw you some like core games, but like we're gonna have like Pokemon Cafe Mix, we're gonna have Pokemon Quest, you know, like I'm trying to think of, I don't know, like I'm trying to think, there's so many Pokemon spin-off games now that I can't even keep up. Like the Serebii page for like their like quote-unquote like Gen 7 and Gen 8 is just like 10 miles long, because when you go to Serebii, it's just like, oh yeah, they released this one app, oh yeah, like technically, Will and I have played Pokemon Smile. That's another thing that you can add to the list of things that we've been playing. So like,
hey man,
that
was a secret. We weren't supposed to talk about that.
You're right. I wasn't supposed to talk about the weird bathroom pictures you and I were sending to each other of us brushing our teeth.
Toothbrushing is fun when it's to rescue Pokemon.
No, I couldn't rescue any of my Pokemon because I use an electric toothbrush and I use it correctly. So I don't do the brushing motion, because you're not supposed to with them. So I couldn't save any of my Pokemon. I just brushed my teeth like 3 times in a row for nothing.
You're supposed to chip your teeth out of your face. Otherwise, how can you effectively rescue the Pokemon?
You're going to need to wait.
I just use my electric toothbrush like a normal toothbrush, and was told that I wasn't supposed to be doing it that way, but
you're not. That's why it spins for you.
I know, but I wanted the ghastly. Like, what am I supposed to do? have good oral hygiene, which is the point of the game? No, that's not why I'm doing this.
Brush. Yeah.
Chels, what else you been playing?
I tried playing a little bit of Ninjala with you. And that was okay. It wasn't... I'd like to try it some more, but there's a lot going on with the different like button combinations you can do and that kind of stuff. I had been playing... blanking. Am I a squid or a kid?
Splatoon 2.
Thank you. This is a personality trait of mine. If I forget a word, I will just yell other words that are tangentially related until someone tells me what I'm talking about. but I have been playing Splatoon 2, and so I had gone in sort of expecting it to play and feel a lot more like Splatoon 2 than it actually did. I feel like it's a little bit slower than Splatoon 2, especially since in Splatoon you can go into the ground and get super fast and swim around and stuff. And then in Splatoon, there's not as many like button combinations for fighting and stuff that you can do. And so, yeah.
Plus guns, yeah.
Yeah.
Guns change it up a little bit. But yeah, it's like, I felt Ninjala was a little slow for me. I know you can do like dashes and stuff, but I was so used to the high speed of using the ink to traverse. Exactly. Around.
Right. Well, and Ninjala does account for that in some ways. Like there are like specials that you can have where you're kind of like, you essentially become like a snorkel that you kind of like go into the pavement basically. And you are almost like when you're in the ink in Splatoon, like they really clearly, someone at Gung Ho Games or Entertainment or whatever it was, like clearly someone there like Splatoon, it was just like, I'm just going to make Splatoon. And I mean, they did a fairly decent job. They just like copied off Splatoon's homework and changed a few things. But like
everything was an ink roller, right?
Right. Right.
Like every single weapon looks like an ink roller.
Sure. That's, I mean, true. Yeah, I mean, it's all melee weapons pretty much. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do like the idea in Ninjala that it is similar to Splatoon in that, like, yeah, you can totally get points and you can totally win by just being really good at defeating other people. But like, well, I mean, like you can't in Splatoon, like that's a secondary goal. And technically it's probably going to help the rest of your team in Splatoon if you do that. But in Ninjala, like, it's like, yeah, you get a lot of points for defeating other people, but then like you have this secondary goal of taking out these drones, which really, I'll tell you, I suck at killing people in Ninjala. But because of the fact that I'm pretty good at just like going off and doing my own thing and getting as many drones as possible, usually like my team will end up winning a lot of matches just because you get basically like these like Mario Party-esque bonus stars at the end for like who got the most drones.
It's pretty absurd.
Yeah,
it's pretty absurd like how much it can bump you up, even if you're like horrible at the game. You can potentially be propelled to at least second place. I don't think I've ever seen it where it like propelled somebody to first place, but
When you're playing that can bump your team up to winning. Like,
sure.
That's true. Yeah.
Especially since like it will award that, like if two or three people are tied, it'll award them both of those players. Right? Yeah, like the full bonus. So if you have a team of like four people who all get the most kills, then you could get like 4,000 points for your team right there. But I mean, yeah, I mean, Ninjala's, I like it. I've been playing it a lot, but I mean, I definitely get why someone wouldn't like it. Especially if like one of the reasons you gravitated towards Splatoon was because it wasn't so focused on like having to take out everyone. You know, obviously Ninjala goes right back into that, you know, regular, that stereotypical like team shooter formula of that is your main objective, but it does kind of mix it up a little bit in a way that I kind of dig. And I, you know, on top of that, it's free to play. Like I've paid 99 cents so far in that game, and the only reason I paid 99 cents is because I wanted to go ahead and get the battle pass, which I think for this season was $10, but I used my like free battle pass in-game currency that I got plus the currency that I paid 99 cents for.
Does that
for
come
it.
With the single player campaign on it?
Yeah. So you can, unlike things like Fortnite and stuff like that, you can actually get like the normal currency with the free battle pass, which I thought was pretty cool.
That is neat. I'm sure it takes a lot of grinding though, right?
It does. It does. But
giving you something to work towards as opposed to just like, I'm never going to reach that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely,
like gaming quality,
right? But yeah, I mean, it's fun. Anything else, Chelsea, that you've been playing?
No, I mean a handful of the random little mobile games and stuff, but nothing interesting, like nothing that Nintendo's released or anything like that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be anything that Nintendo released, but anything, nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Not really.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, it's been kind of a weird time for everyone, obviously, and not necessarily, You know, other than things like Ghost of Tsushima and Paper Mario, there haven't been like a lot of new releases lately.
Can I have one more thing?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, sure. So I have been playing a mobile game, or I had been playing when I stopped playing it, called Trivia Royale. And okay. So it's like, don't remember.
HQ?
Well, yeah, it's like HQ. No money involved. You basically just get like a crown, similar to how they did in Fortnite. But yeah, it's just a trivia competition. There's 1,000 people, and it breaks it down to one person at the end. And the closest I got was second place. But once you level up enough, you get the ability to go into topics. So you can choose what kind of trivia topics that you want to play. And naturally, I gravitated towards video games. Well, sure. I guess somebody had been playing the game for a couple weeks before I got into it. And I got into it as like the beta. And they had like 1,000 wins or like 1,200 wins or something like that in just the video games trivia alone. But I got to third place in the world on Trivia Royale in the video games trivia section. And it's really just a matter of winning every time. And it got to the point where you could literally ask me like a trivia question that was in part of it, and I could like instantly respond with the answer. And it got to the point where I'd like be able to see the letters out of the corner of my eye, and just like, because it's time too. So it gives you 10 seconds or whatever it is, and you get points taken off if you let the clock run down. So the best players basically had to give instant answers to every single one of the questions, and it was to a point where I'd win every single time because I knew all the answers after all. Even some of the ones was sort of like off the cuff, like just games that I weren't really familiar with, like some beat 'em ups and stuff like that. I eventually grew to know the answers and then could use that information to answer it instantly. But yeah, I think I'm sitting it with like 400 wins right now, 403. And I was top three in the world, number one in Florida. And then obviously number one in the city, and then it goes all the way down. But yeah, it was sort of an addictive thing just because it was sort of the joy of being able to win that much. And then it eventually became to the point where I was like, I'm not really proving anything by playing this game because it's just me regurgitating information, which I guess is what trivia is. But for the most part, it's like being able to discern an answer out of your possible solutions, which is, you know, the big thing of what draws people to bars for trivia night and whatnot.
Right.
But yeah, like a majority of the stuff I knew because of my video game knowledge, because of being around since the 80s and been playing since, you know, the 80s. But yeah, beyond that, it was just a matter of, ooh, I got that one wrong. Better figure out what the right answer is. But the most annoying questions in all of Trivia Royale are based on Animal Crossing. And the reason why is because they will specifically ask you what kind of animal is a particular character's like, they'll give you the character name,
the villagers,
yeah. And they'll say like, is what kind of animal is this? And
yeah, that's
like, I don't
that's
know terrible. It's a freaking eagle. I have no idea.
I would hate that so much.
It was so annoying. And then I learned them. I feel shame to say that I learned the answers, and I feel bad inside my soul that I did that just so I could get every single answer correct and get up to that third spot.
Listen, all I know is Sprocket is a robot chicken, and that's the only villager I need.
No, that's not true. You need Marshall.
No, I hope that when I come back, I legitimately hope when I come back that everyone is gone except Sprocket. And I don't even have Sprocket. I just hope that Sprocket murdered like everyone
randomly,
else in my town.
Yeah, randomly appears, goes haywire, kills all your villagers, and is welcoming you with open robotic wings.
Yes.
I know that one of the villagers is a frog, and I only care about that because every time you catch a frog, it says, I caught a frog, and I might need to apologize to someone.
But do you know his name?
No.
Then you're going to fail Trivia Royale. I'm sorry. You shouldn't even
try.
I mean,
the ship of me doing well at trivia sailed so long ago.
I mean, it's always a bad pun with Animal Crossing, so it's probably something like croak. He's like a Frenchman, and he's...
And his catchphrase is, look at me, because it never relates to anything.
Or like, yeah, I mean, sometimes they'll be like, wee wee, or stuff like that, but like, yeah. Animal Crossing Villagers, I'll never under... when it seems like this game in particular, and maybe I just wasn't into the Animal Crossing subculture, but like, it seems like this game in particular, the villager, like the specific villager hype got to like a toxic, uncomfortable level, especially when it came to like Raymond, the cat, yeah, with like the two different colored eyes, yeah, that like people got a little bit too into in a uncomfortable way.
I think the rule of the internet should be revoked for Animal Crossing because of that gentleman cat.
Yeah. That was uncomfortable. But Brian, is the game sort of like HQ in where you can actually get money out of it, or it's not?
Oh, that's what I was saying. There's not really any end reward other than you get a crown, and then you get invited to the Winner's Lounge, pretty much. Mm. And then I don't know what's inside it because I never got in first place. Like I said, the closest I got was second place, and this is just any trivia. They'll give you, like, what is this city in Africa? Like, just random crap. And I got all the way down to second place, and I bombed on, like, one of the easiest questions. Once I saw the answer, I was like, oh, my gosh. Come on. And it was, like, the first day I started playing it, I got all the way down to second place. But, yeah, no, there's really no money involved. Just, like, bragging rights or whatever.
So, yeah. That does sound super fun, but I will say
it is
like,
fun. But yeah, it would be much nicer if there was like some money to split with.
Yeah,
however
like
many people end up with all the answers.
That initial few months when HQ first came out, I feel like right now the world needs HQ more than ever. I feel like that would be like this is. We're already living in an apocalyptic hellscape. Why not just have like a Hunger Games-esque TV show host come to us every single night and say, fight for money, dance for me!
Dude, I remember everybody was ticked off at the host. They were like, he's so annoying!
It's Scott Rogowski.
He's so obnoxious. Yeah, I mean, you expected it, but like, there were so many people that just couldn't handle it, and they kept playing the game anyways.
Sure, well... Yeah, and also, I feel like, yeah, it started
the prospect
out with,
of money, yeah.
Well, sure, and also, just like, people were like, oh, Scott Rogowski, he sucks. But then it was like, oh, actually, but then when you put other people on, they're actually worse. So, yeah. Like, I'm actually not
like, please go
to...
back.
Yeah,
yeah, and he had substitutes, remember? He would have, like, I don't remember the girl's name, but she would appear sometimes, and
right.
They had a couple different hosts, I think, that ended up doing it, but... Yeah, it's like you want a solution. Here's your solution. No,
I wonder if
please go back.
I wonder if there's an HQ wiki somewhere that has a list of every single
ever
HQ host,
every episode.
Yeah, and how many times they've hosted? That's got to be a thing, right?
And how many times they said,
"It's your boy."
Yeah.
Scott,
I was gonna say without further ado, but yeah, that works.
Oh too. Yeah, yeah. Scott Rogowski coming in at 9,000. It's your boys in one episode. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get into the news because there is quite a bit of it. We haven't really, since this is the first episode, we haven't actually talked about anything yet. In terms of like what's happened in quote unquote E3 or whatever you want to call this thing that's been happening
E3.
For the past month.
E3.
Yes.
Thanks to Kanye.
We're gonna
dub it
right.
E3.
Oof.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, we had our little we started off with what, Sony, right?
Yeah,
which one dropped first, the Nintendo Direct or Sony's?
No, Sony's. So Sony's first. So I'll go ahead and real quick run down what was talked about at Sony's, and then we can kind of discuss it. But so in no particular order, the things that were shown at Sony had their PlayStation 5 reveal event, which was about a month ago now, maybe a little more. But yeah, Sony kicked things off with the new console reveals, or in terms of the games that we were going to see for that console. And they showed Kena Bridge of Spirits, which I don't really frankly remember. Goodbye Volcano High, Ghostwire Tokyo, Horizon Forbidden West, Bugsnacks. Village Resident Evil 8, Deathloop, Returnal, Jet, The Far Shore, Project Athea, Spider-Man Miles Morales, Solar Ash, Stray, Gran Turismo 7, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, Oddworld Soulstorm, Hitman 3, Pragmata, NBA 2K21, Astro's Playroom, Demon's Souls Remastered, Sackboy, A Big Adventure, Destruction All-Stars, Godfall, and they showed that, to no one's surprise, GTA 5 would be coming to the new generation of consoles.
I guess it's appropriate that you ended with that, because that's probably the first thing I want to talk about.
It's also how they started the conference.
Can we just be over that game? I mean, if you have the opportunity to play it, you might still play it for online. But otherwise, I mean, there's people that beat this game like hundreds of times by now. Like, can we stop making that a thing? I really feel that that was a bad way to start everything that they did. For what I consider otherwise a really, really nice showcase of excellent looking games. Like, I was really surprised by the fidelity that they were able to show. And just, I mean, yeah, it's all pretty for the trailers and everything, of course, but what I saw, I was really impressed with, and not specifically because of the graphics. Like, I mean, I could just do like a rundown of some of the stuff that most impressed me. The one that you were talking about, I think it's Kena Bridge of Spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That one is also coming to the PlayStation 4, but it's basically the one that looked like it worked like Pikmin.
Mm-hmm.
Where the girl was walking around, I think it was a girl with a staff, and had the ability to sort of like control these spirits. If I'm thinking of the correct one, I'm believing that's what it was. I'm going to double check.
Yeah. I'm looking at the trailer now.
Yeah, she's got like these cool little spirits and stuff like that that she can control. And it's actually by Epic Games, so it's going to be on the PC through their launcher as well. But yeah, no, it looks very interesting. I think most of what we were looking at was a trailer, but they did show some in-engine gameplay, and like, it's a gorgeous game, like really, really nice looking game. And I think that mostly has to do with just like the background of what they're doing with it. They obviously have some kind of like symbolism by different, I'm not sure if it's Celtic or what it is, but it looks really cool. And the fact that she can control like these creatures and stuff, I thought was really neat. And I like the way that they sort of take the world, and it's like you're trying to bring the life back to the world, so you're fighting all these creatures, and when you defeat them, you know, like it blossoms again and all the grass turns green, and you know, you get the ability to control more of these creatures and stuff. I thought that was really cool. That one actually stood out a lot for me, even more so than some of the exclusives. And then,
well, you know what's weird? It actually kind of looks a lot like that, whatever it's called, the Everwild or whatever, the thing that Rare showed at Microsoft, except a better version of that.
Right. No, and I mean, the graphics are really good. Like, I really was impressed by Everwild too. But like, I mean, there's just some freeze frames in this trailer that is like, I can't believe what I'm looking at. And it does like that Nintendo appeal of the beautiful colors that pop, and just like that lively animation from the characters and whatnot, that Nintendo usually is the only one that seems to be able to, in the world, pull that kind of stuff off. And it seems like it would fit really well on that kind of console if Nintendo would release something that has HD quality to it. But we didn't get our announcement for any new Nintendo consoles, so we have to deal with what we're dealing with now. I was thoroughly impressed by that one. And then I guess the biggest thing for me was probably tied between, and it's so silly because of what it is, Astro's Playroom. I loved the Astrobot VR game. And I've made that known to you, like, how much I adored it, like, how much I felt like this was a lost Mario game. And it's so weird to think of it that way, but it really felt like it had those tight controls. It had those brilliant visuals. It did a lot of smart things with the gameplay mechanics. It did a lot of smart things with the VR. I mean, it literally took your head and had it going down into the ocean following these dolphins and stuff. Like, it was just really, really neat what they were able to do with it. And even though it was like, it was pitched, or, you know, originally as the PlayStation VR demo, I think they took it to beyond that original demo when they released the full game, and I enjoyed that a lot. I played it multiple times, and now this game is getting packed in with the system. And I mean, we saw Keeley play it. We saw Jeff play it on the stream when he was showing off the controller, the new DualShock. But I think it's a full game.
You can call him Keeley. He listens to this podcast. He's a big fan of the show.
Sure. So. I'm sure he'll be calling in later.
I call him Keeley all the time.
But yeah, what I saw there, I was really impressed with, and it seems like they're sticking with the same style. They're going to use some of the gimmicks, of course, of the new controller. But that's what the VR one did as well, and it did it so well that it didn't even bother me. It didn't feel like a gimmick. Like, I usually hate games that are like, we're going to try to shoehorn this stuff in. Like, a lot of the Wii U titles that came out, and they were just like, you have to use this controller. You have to use the touchscreen. You have to use this combination between the television and this controller to make the stuff work. And that bothered me so much. But they do it so well. They really is a perfect showcase for the system, perfect showcase for the controller. Seems like it's going to be a really good representation of what to expect from the interactivity of a PlayStation 5 controller. And then that, I was saying, was tied with Ratchet and Clank for me, because what they did with the portal system and being able to instantaneously go from one area to the next with no loading screen is just, I mean, I'm getting used to that being the future now, just talking about the idea of no loading screens. But I mean, I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima, and it does a very good job at like hiding that. I think the longest loading screen that I saw in Ghost of Tsushima is like 6 seconds, which,
oh wow,
yeah, it's insane to have a game that big be able to hide so much so effectively. And it's that impressive what they can do with the technology that we currently have. But seeing a game that like uses that to its full limits really impresses me as far as what they can do with the gameplay and how they can evolve that as a structure in the future. Those two really stuck out to me. I mean, there was a lot of cool games. And I'm a fan of a lot of the franchises that they showed off, but those two really stuck out to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're in, you say that it seems weird, but I think you're actually in pretty good company now in terms of people who have an affinity for the Astrobots. I mean, I think that people have kind of came like full circle on that whole thing. Is, I think maybe when it first got announced, or like when people were like, oh, that weird, you know, Playroom mascot thing, they're making a generic platformer game out of that, that's quirky and weird, like that should be in the bargain bin in a few days. And like, no, I mean, it actually ended up being robust, incredible platformer. And I think, you know, I saw a lot of major publications, you know, giving that game its due and saying, you know, actually this is a really good game, and Sony should be using this to kind of like try and capitalize it. I mean, personally for me, like, I know that, like, what is it, Toro or whatever is the like PlayStation mascot, the little cat or whatever. Like,
right. For me personally, it was Crash Bandicoot, remember? That was like their big selling. Sure. It's always Crash Bandicoot. You sure, know, they had him like ripping on Mario Kart and
right. All but now, but now, like I kind of see like the Astrobot kind of to me like is the Sony mascot, and I feel like they should kind of capitalize
it's
on that.
Got the
a little
same
bit.
Color scheme. It just makes sense. It's got the same color scheme as the PlayStation 5.
Right, that's
the ones they showed off. So, yeah, right. I think they did a really good job with making that a character that can fit right into that ecosystem. That they should just make it the mascot. And I mean, it's cute enough. It's got like such a nice aesthetic to its design that I feel that they could get away with putting it all over all the advertisers. Nobody would even blink. They'd be like, "Oh yeah, Astrobot. He's the mascot for Sony." You know.
Sure.
Or at least for the system, it could just be a system mascot. I don't really care. I want to see more of him. I really enjoy every time he comes up on the screen. So,
yeah. Will, did you watch Sony's press conference?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of would agree with most of what you were saying. I think, I think maybe you see more kind of like that gorilla push of like getting the Astrobot into, I don't know, like other games and stuff, that he could start to build into the brand more. I don't have VR, so I haven't unfortunately played the does it come with PSVR, the original game, Brian?
So the PlayStation demo disc, the PlayStation VR demo disc had it, and that's what we were playing over at Alex's house. But
right.
The Astrobot Rescue Mission is a separate, fully realized title. And then obviously this is the sequel to that, so.
Right. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing I thought was pretty exciting from Sony's side. Yeah, I actually missed by the time I jumped in, I had missed the Grand Theft Auto like piece at the beginning. So I had like new titles right away. So I could see how that's
lucky.
Frustrating for sure.
Yeah,
right?
Lucky.
Like, didn't miss anything, but
whoops.
Got excited with a lot of them. Definitely excited for Horizon, and Pragmata looks cool too. And it's cool to see Capcom putting something out too. So we'll see. It looks a little bit like Dead Space, Death Stranding, but that can't be a bad thing. So
sure. Yeah, I mean it. All the games that Sony showed, I think, were pretty impressive. Charles, did you hear anything about the Sony event or any of the stuff that came out of it?
All I've been hearing from that Sony event is the Bugsnax theme song.
Right. So
yes.
So yeah, I mean, we're gonna talk about it.
No.
So perhaps the most divisive thing that came out of the Sony press conference, because obviously some incredible looking games. You have the sequel to Horizon, with Horizon Forbidden West. You have a Ratchet and Clank game that looks incredible, just in terms of the things that they're doing with just, going through all these different environments and no load screens and all this stuff. It looks insane. You have, what looks to be, they've waffled on it a bit, but like back and forth, they've said that Miles Morales is going to be a full-on sequel in some regard to the original Spider-Man, even though it's not necessarily going to be Spider-Man 2. So I mean that that's built from the ground up as far as I understand for PS5, but maybe I'm wrong. But that looks incredible. But the thing I think for me anyway, and for a lot of the more meme-y subsets of the internet that came out of that press conference was, of course, Bugsnax. And Bugsnax, made by Young Horses, the developers of Octodad, is going to be releasing on the PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5. I don't know if there's going to be a PSVR version of that. I think there is.
it's coming to the Epic Games Store, so it'll be on PC as well.
Oh, okay, will it? Okay.
Yeah.
But Bugsnax basically is a game in which a group of explorers go to a island called Snacktooth Island and are investigating these little creatures called Bugsnax, which are little pieces of food that are sentient and walking around and kind of like they apparently if the trailer is to be believed, they say their own name in the way that Pokemon do. The whole thing looks really cute. It has the potential to be really great if it's an actually fun game to play. But just how colorful it was, and the song made by Caro Caro Bonito, I have not been able to get out of my head since that trailer. And I'm full on hyped for Bugsnax.
You are so hyped for Bugsnax.
So hyped for Bugsnax.
I'm just.
It reminds me a lot of Slime Rancher. Like, it's like a Slime Rancher.
It does kind of look like Slime
Rancher. Viva Pinata. And then, like, the bad parts from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too.
I mean, if you want to go into the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
There's a leak in the boat.
Yeah, right.
Like.
No, I mean, in that regard, yeah, there's some taken from that for sure. The Viva Piñata comparison's kind of interesting, especially since, once again, it seems like right now Sony and studios affiliated with Sony right now are continuing to do Rare better than Rare does Rare. And to an extent that's frustrating, to an extent that's pretty cool, but yeah, I mean, I definitely got a lot of those vibes too. I don't even know what Bugsnax is yet. Like, I don't know if it's going to end up being a 3D platformer, or
I think it's like an exploratory game, because it says that you're supposed to discover, hunt, and capture all 100 different species of Bugsnax using a variety of contraptions and bait. So I'm guessing it's sort of like a semi Pokemon type game,
like Ape Escape, like that type of thing. You think maybe?
I think that it's like you use some of the other bugs to lure the other bugs to be able to capture them, which is sort of crazy if you think about it, with all these like live burritos and honeycombs and pineapples and strawberries, of course, just like doing their own thing, and you snatch one up and it's like, here, you're going to have to help me capture this one. And that reminds me a lot of Stranger's Wrath, that Oddworld game.
Yeah.
Where you like picked up the different animals and used them as weapons and stuff like that. That reminds me a little bit of that, which I really liked that game. I thought it was really cool. But I don't know, man. It's definitely an interesting looking title. It's definitely interesting to see like these Muppets as characters.
Sure.
And they're the ones that are going out and like forcing these food creatures to like satiate these other food creatures, whether they want to or not.
Right. Yeah, well, and I feel like with that, probably more so than actually like picking, like feeding the animals to the other, or the bug snacks, I guess, to the other bug snacks, I feel like it's going to be a situation where you're, because the whole premise behind the game is you eat the bug snacks yourself, and then parts of your body become those snacks. So like,
oh, that's
you,
right. I forgot about that element. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to be like feeding your right arm to like a cheeseburger in order to like as bait? Like, are you going to be bait for big old cheeseburger monster? Like,
I don't know. If they do it right, there will be plenty of opportunity for Orwellian horrors.
Sure.
Like Spore, right? Spore, but with food.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I could see it. But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, if you had to A through F, how would you grade Sony's press conference?
I don't know. I mean, they really knocked it out of the park with just like what they're showcasing. You have a clear idea of what they're trying to do with it. I would at least put in an A, maybe an A-. I mean, they didn't show like the hard hitters like God of War 2 or anything like that, but I feel like they still did a really good job. If I'm correct, the Horizon trailer was the last one, and that was sort of like, we have one more thing kind of thing.
Right.
And so I thought that was pretty good, but I was hoping for, you know, something additional that, like, out of the franchises that we've heard of recently.
Sure.
I was hoping Corey Barlog was holding out on us about God of War 2. that we were going to see something, even a trailer or even just a logo, something like that, I thought would be awesome. But yeah, no, I think they did a really good job of covering everything, sports wise and platformers and just like these demonic horror games, like the remake of Demon's Souls and superhero genre. I mean, that Spider-Man was such an amazing game, and to have it from Miles Morales, which is easily my new favorite Spider-Man, especially with how well the movie did. I mean, it's the perfect time to capitalize on that. I'm sure, I mean, my own sons watch that like religiously, so I think it's the perfect time for them to be able to put him in the spotlight. I mean, obviously he was in the other game, but to have him be, you know, the main character on the tin is, I think, really important. And I think they did a really good job. So I'd say maybe an A-. It would have been A+ for me if I would have saw like one of those triple A's just sort of coming back into the fray, or like a sequel to a game that was like 2 years ago. So.
Sure. Okay. Will, what about you?
Yeah, I would say A category. I think it was excellent. I think there wasn't a lot of those like baity like teasers that, like, I mean, I really enjoy when you have like Elder Scrolls, like the teaser coming out for the next one coming up and Metroid Prime 4, but there wasn't a lot of that. It was kind of just cut to the chase. Here's the trailers, and or here's a teaser for like a game that we haven't introduced this IP yet. But otherwise it was, I think, very like informative and like straight to the point. Here's what we got.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of how I felt about it. It was definitely, in my opinion, the strongest of the three. If you even want to call what Nintendo did part of it.
Oh, we're calling it.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about it, but
we're putting it on the line.
Yeah. So
I got its phone number.
Yeah. So going into that, Nintendo has kind of been MIA for the most part since, I guess, their last Direct Mini was at the beginning of this year. And at the last Direct Mini, they showed some third-party games that we would be seeing. They which I know, Brian, you take some exception to some of this, but essentially they were like, we're going to be releasing a bunch of 2K games, which was like Borderlands, BioShock, and XCOM. I don't feel like there were a lot of other big announcements for me anyway, although I don't recall exactly when it was that they announced the Breath of the Wild sequel was in development. It might have been at that mini direct at the beginning of this year, or it might have been earlier than that. But yeah, they had a mini direct at the beginning of the year. It was fine. And I think kind of people were like, okay, this is great. This is going to tide us over until E3. And then obviously, a global pandemic happened. And even prior to that happening, I think everyone was kind of pulling out of E3. There were, you know, Sony made the big announcement that they weren't going to be at E3 this year. A few other developers were kind of like, yeah, we're kind of doing our own thing. You know, like EA never really had a big presence at E3. Microsoft kind of had like their own separate, like they had booths at E3, but like their press conference, I think, was held at a different site. But Microsoft still very much was going to capitalize on the fact that Sony wasn't going to be there, and everyone was like, okay, well, this is kind of Microsoft's time to shine. And you didn't really hear a lot from Nintendo in terms of, like, you know, you knew they were going to be there, but obviously they went away from the traditional press conference format, like probably before the Wii U even officially launched. So they haven't really been doing that for a long time and have just been kind of doing directs. So I was like, okay, there's going to be a direct around that time, right? And then there wasn't really, and everyone kind of freaked out, and, you know, there were, you know, rumors and conspiracy theories for months. It seemed like starting like back in April, people were like, okay, there's going to be a direct, you know, I tested the wind. It's, you know, it's going to be it's a leap year this year. So Nintendo's going to do it on a Thursday at 9 a.m. and it's just going to drop because my horoscope told me so. And that every single time they were wrong. They were wrong. They were wrong. And then for whatever reason, recently someone got it like marginally right in terms of like, we're going to have this thing on July 20th. And that was great and all, but leading into that, at the beginning of the summer, we had a surprise announcement that we were going to be getting a new Paper Mario game. And everyone was kind of freaked out because obviously we haven't had a Paper Mario game since Color Splash, and people were hoping that it was going to be a return to form, and it wasn't really, but you know, as we kind of already talked about, it was still good. You know, it still looked promising. But so then Nintendo's like, okay, we're going to do this thing where we're going to showcase some gameplay and we're going to show one more thing at the end. And they set expectations. They were like, okay, it's going to be from Way Forward, which is the developers of the Shantae series. And I think Mighty Switch Force, maybe, unless I'm getting that wrong.
No, that's
but
right.
Like,
yep.
Okay. And so they're like, yeah, you know, these guys who make these 2D platformers, they're going to be, you know, showing us this cool thing. And so everyone was like, okay, you know, of course everyone gets their expectations way too high for these things. And was like, okay, these people are definitely working on a 2D Metroid. And then Nintendo literally had to come out because everyone was like, okay, what are the 2D? Let's think of every single 2D thing that could be at this thing. Okay. It's going to be a Wario Land game. It's going to be a Metroid game. And so Nintendo, like an hour later, had to be like, hey guys, shut up. Like it's not any of those things. It's like a third party property, and it's like something they've never worked with before, and you're all way off base, which is like really uncharacteristic for Nintendo to do stuff like that, because usually they just let expectations get super high. But in this case, they're just like, no, you guys are, you know, we saw what happened with Federation Force. We're not letting you guys speculate on Metroid at all with this thing. And so, even despite those very low expectations, we come out and Paper Mario is shown and everything. And they're like, all right, here's the one more thing. And it's a Bakugan game. And everyone's like,
whoop, whoop.
What the fuck is Bakugan? And so, like, we know what it is, kind of. I mean, it was after my time, but I think Bakugan was like one of those little like toy games where like you have a little plastic ball and you throw it out and they like transform, you know, like it's like the new generation's Transformers, basically. It looks fine. I'll be honest with you, I didn't even stick around for the trailer because as soon as I saw what it was, I was just like, this is not for me. I'm never gonna play this. So
yeah, my 10-year-old was excited, but I was like, no. But he actually, right. I mean, he actively plays with the Bakugan, so it makes sense that he would care about it, but yeah, it was, I don't know who they were. I don't know the like group of people they were trying to showcase that to, because I'm pretty sure it's not the people that were watching it. I honestly don't, I think they completely missed their mark of who would want that game. I well, really yeah. feel that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is when you're Nintendo, when you're doing this type of stuff, you're supposed to be setting expectations. And it seems like they tried to do that, but like there was no reason for a Bakugan game to be a surprise announcement. They literally should have just said, hey, Way Forward wants to show you all their Bakugan game after this. It's kind of like when you invite a bunch of your friends over and like your kid wants to show you the thing that he worked on in art class. That like, okay, you know, like we're all gonna sit around and we're gonna have a movie night and we're gonna watch, you know, this masterpiece of a movie, but like, let's set aside 5 minutes at the end before you guys go home because Billy really wants to show you this paper mache thing that he made. That's kind of what it felt like. And like, no disrespect to Way Forward, because obviously they're gonna make something incredible and I know they're all super excited for it, but like, Nintendo really screwed them over in terms of like how they messaged this thing, because it just seemed like everyone was ticked off at, I don't know if they were ticked off at Way Forward or Nintendo or both. It seemed like both. And I just feel like it wasn't really justified, but the blame can almost exclusively fall on Nintendo and how they messaged the thing.
Well, the biggest thing for me is that, like, it's not their type of game. They don't make games like that. They don't make these, like, over-the-top 3D fighting games. They don't make Pokemon clones of Bakugan. They make platformers. Really yeah. well-drawn platformers. And it threw me off just to see them sort of put in this position. I don't know if it was, like, Nintendo getting some kind of semblance of the rights to sort of push this on way forward. I don't know what the partnership was, but it seemed completely out of left field and not in a good way. Like, it was like, hey, you know, you love Pokemon, right? Well, here's a game that sort of looks like Pokemon, but with really janky animations. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that with the way that Sword and Shield was, but they have really, really, really janky animations where the two Bakugan that you're fighting with are literally just going to stand there and do the same attack over and over and over again. And you're going to go over in this overworld and talk to these people that look less than enthused in a game that looks like it should have came out for the Wii. I mean, that's right. What I was legitimately thinking the entire time I was watching it. I'm like, this could have been a Wii game, like, honestly.
Right.
I mean, the Wii could support, I mean, the GameCube could support Metroid Prime. So if the Wii could support Metroid Prime 3, then they definitely could have done better with the graphics that they ended up with for this game. And I was just wholly disappointed. But, like, I set my expectations, like, really low. And it surprised the crap out of me because it was like, what even is this? Who that's watching this right now is going to be like, yes, this is the game I've been waiting my entire life for. I am so excited. I am thanking everybody involved. Thank you so much for putting this on there. Well, every expectation I had was justified. Like, it's just, it's so silly. Like, I don't even know what they were thinking. It seems like they completely lost who they are as a company and who they're catering to.
You thought your expectations were low before, because then we went on after that, after a pretty strong backlash, and roughly a week later, Nintendo stealth dropped once again the announcement that they would be holding their first ever Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase. And I believe somehow either it was found out by looking in their video playlists, or somehow someone found out that the Direct was going to be around 10 minutes. Maybe they said that somewhere. I don't know. Obviously you can't see this, but Brian has showed a picture of 2K Battlegrounds John Cena in the group chat. Obviously we didn't know that we were going to be talking about 2K Battlegrounds during this thing, because the expectations for this thing, there was no way. Unfortunately, Nintendo let this thing build up so long that once they finally opened the floodgates to the possibility of a Nintendo Direct, there was no stopping anyone's expectations, even if they tried to manage them. They came out and said, hey, this thing's going to be a mini direct. We're going to be showing our third-party partners and be giving some updates on games that were previously announced. And none of that did any good, because everyone was like, okay, this direct is just going to be back-to-back bangers. It's going to be Metroid Prime 4, Bayonetta 3, it's going to be Bravely Default 2. It's going to be, there's been this new Twitter account for an F-Zero anniversary that's been registered to a Nintendo email address. So definitely they're going to talk about F-Zero. You know, this is just going to be the best Direct ever. And somehow they're going to do all of this in 10 minutes. I just know it. And instead we got 2K Battlegrounds John Cena. And
Shin Megami Tensei.
Yes. So in total, what was shown in the North American version of the Direct, which admittedly is the worst version of that Direct, you got DLC for Cadence of Hyrule.
Not gonna lie, that had me excited though. And we can talk about that after you go down the list.
Me too. That's the only thing I think that I was actually excited about. But DLC for Cadence of Hyrule, there was a at first what I thought it was going to be was like a stealth announcement of like a Watch Dogs game, like either one or two coming to Switch, or like, and with like a new DLC pack or something like that, because it gave a very Watch Dogs vibe. But I don't even know the name of the game, but because I didn't bother to look it up, honestly. But it was basically a free to play game that kind of looked like Overwatch meets Watch Dogs 2 aesthetic. Where it's like, you know, cyberpunky kind of world, and you're a team-based rogue shooter. Company. Yeah, Rogue by Company.
High-Res Studios, yeah.
Yes, Rogue Company by High-Res Studios, the people who make Smite and stuff like that. So, and then they showed a trailer for 2KE, WWE 2KE Battlegrounds for no reason. Literally no reason. That game was a known quantity. Everyone knew that was coming to Switch. No idea why they showed a trailer for WWE 2KE Battlegrounds. And then the big announcement, the one more thing, which everyone knew was going to happen, but people assumed it was going to be like, oh, it's going to be Metroid Prime 4, it's going to be Bayonetta 3. No, it was Shin Megami Tensei 5, which they have not talked about for like 2-3 years at this point. And like there have been no updates on that game whatsoever. And I think people kind of just figured it's an Atlus game. It'll just randomly, like, they'll just be like, hey, it's coming to Japan in 2 months and the US gets it in two years.
I was hoping for Persona 5. I was really hoping that they were going to be like, suddenly drop that. And then I'd be like, oh yeah, I will definitely play this on my Switch all the time. But no, they dug real deep. What, 17 years ago was when the original came out, and then they did they're doing the remake for it.
Right,
then,
right, yeah.
Yeah, and then I 5, and I obviously.
Yeah, and I didn't even say that. So yeah, Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne is getting an HD remaster for the Nintendo Switch and also the PlayStation 4. And then, yeah, there's going to be... you know, Shin Megami Tensei 5, we already knew that was coming. And they just showed us, apparently, it looked like the exact same trailer that we saw.
Before, yeah.
Yeah, except just like, hey, we've had more development time. So here's the trailer you already saw. And also, it's coming out in 2021, and it's going to be a worldwide simultaneous release. And cool. And then, if you were watching the Japanese Direct, you had a couple more games were shown. Atelier Riza 2 was shown. So if you're an Atelier fan, good for you. Then there was also shown one game at the beginning that is like a really stylized, you know, kind of like chibi, looking like a 2.5D kind of like platformer. I forget what it's called, like Rice and Ruin or something like that. I don't remember. But that one actually looked really good, honestly.
Sakuna of Rice and Ruin.
Yes, thank you. So that was shown at the beginning of the Japanese Direct, and that one actually probably, other than Cadence of Hyrule, which was already a known entity, that Rice and Ruin game looked like the best game out of anything that was shown, and probably should have been shown in the North American Direct, but wasn't.
That's really impressive looking. Like, that reminds me of like Secret of Mana kind of style.
Yeah,
that looks really cool. I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't watch obviously the Japanese.
Oh, you didn't know?
No,
about that?
I didn't see it at all. But no, I'm really impressed by this. This looks really cool.
That game looks really good. It was the best thing that they announced that day, and they didn't even think that North America would care about it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crappy. But we get freaking N64 John Cena over here. I guess in summation, I'll let you guys talk about it, but basically, I personally was not impressed. I set my expectations very low for the Nintendo Direct, and was still disappointed because I figured at the end of the day, I was ramping myself up for something on either Bayonetta 3 or Metroid Prime 4 because of the fact that, you know, I know that Retro Studios is so closely aligned with Nintendo that they basically like are in-house at this point, and they might even be actually partially owned by Nintendo at this point. But like, I figured that Nintendo might consider them enough of a quote-unquote third party that they might have a Metroid Prime 4 update in there. And obviously Platinum Games is working on Bayonetta 3. So I was like, okay, it's going to be one of those games. They're not going to give us both. They're going to give us one of them. And they're just going to be like, hey, here's a release year and a new trailer. And it's going to be pushed back. But we're going to give you some false hope now. And they didn't even do that. Like they have not acknowledged Bayonetta 3's existence, I think, since like 2017. Every once in a while, Hideki Kamiya is like, yeah, I'm still working on it, but that's it. So I was thoroughly disappointed with what they did, even with the lowest expectations I had. And like, I know some people on Twitter refuse to allow anyone to be upset because they assume that every single person who is upset when something is disappointing is the type of person that's going to send somebody a death threat and is going to try to, you know, do something really inappropriate and harass someone. But no, you're also allowed to be disappointed when something did not meet your expectations. And in this case, it didn't even come close to my expectations. It was actually, frankly, like a little insulting when it came to like the 2K Battleground stuff, because that to me just seemed so thoroughly unnecessary that I would have preferred it to have been a 6-minute direct and them not even show that.
Yeah, it was definitely a slap in the face.
Yeah.
They could have split the Battlegrounds time and at least talked about Fight Crab, like half Fight Crab, half Battlegrounds, because that's exciting.
What is Fight Crab?
It's a game where crabs fight. It's coming to Switch.
Like, I've never heard of this game.
They don't understand the north or the western you know what we're looking for in games. It's crabs, it's fighting crabs with knives and rockets and all that. So
what you're saying is Bugsnax. I'm in.
And Bugsnax. Sony got it right, nail on the head.
Crabs are snacks, therefore crab snacks.
Crabs are real snacks. You don't even have to make them snacks, they're already
very expensive snacks.
Yeah,
true.
But yeah, no, like, I don't know how I can say I feel about the Direct Direct Mini, because, like, I was so excited about the fact that there's going to be more to Cadence of Hyrule, it didn't even matter to me. Like, that, I mean, it was your 2019 Game of the Year, Alex, from what I recall you saying to me.
Right,
Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah, and I didn't even do like a formal Game of the Year for that year, but yeah, I mean, that was the one that I think if I had to do a Game of the Year for 2019, weirdly enough, I just think that Cadence of Hyrule was the one that just came about at just the right time and was just so impactful. It was like basically my Tetris effect for that year.
And it's just so good. They did it so perfectly well, and the new DLC pack is adding like Family Jewels renditions of all of the songs. And I know there's two other artists, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but like the fact that you can basically take these three music packs and completely replace the music in the game with these alternate versions is really cool. But the thing obviously that I'm most excited about is just more story. And it stars Skull Kid. I mean, having his abilities to change his masks and change his his powers and stuff like that, I think is really neat idea. And that combined with the music-based gameplay of moving around and attacking is just so cool. And that saved the whole thing for me. I couldn't even care less about everything else they showed. But the fact that I know that there's more Cadence of Hyrule on the horizon has me that excited about it, just because I felt like that was the most perfect combination of just like, I mean, because everybody loves the Zelda soundtracks, and having a game that's based around bopping around and attacking things to the beat of the soundtracks is just like
perfect to me. I mean, I love rhythm games. One of my favorite games of all time is Rez, so I love any games that can merge that kind of gameplay and music together harmoniously. And I felt like it did it so well, like you said, at the perfect time. It was just a great little snack of a game. And I mean, you
can bug snack.
Yeah, even one that involved, well, I don't think there are any bugs in the game. But anyways, no, I really, really enjoyed the original, and I'm so excited to play more of it. I mean, obviously, I played through both the, or all three of the campaigns that they offered in the original version with Link, Zelda, and I don't remember the Necro Dancer's name.
Cadence, right?
I guess it. I guess it would Cadence. Be. Is her name Cadence?
Yeah.
It just didn't come to me when I was trying to think of what it was. But yeah, that sure. I guess that makes sense. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed that, and that made me excited about the whole thing. And I could care less about all the garbage that they threw at it. I'm disappointed that they decided to throw that stuff in there, but I know there's a market of that contributes to a particular player market, and I know that there are people that are wanting more Shin Megami Sensei, and should they have waited to do a specific direct about that, or just like a hey, here's a trailer, and just drop it on Nintendo's YouTube account. That could have worked, but the fact that they included the Cadence of Hyrule that sort of just completely threw me by surprise made up for it for me.
We'll see, but that's how you take the lesson that you learned with the Paper Mario and Bakugan incident, and you make a positive out of it, and you learn from your mistakes. Because what you do following that is like, hey, we almost got this right because people were super on board with what we did with the Paper Mario stuff. But we kind of screwed up with the thing at the end. We can use that exact same format though and be like, hey, guess what? Shin Megami Tensei Direct. And one more thing at the end, surprise announcement. And then you just show Shin Megami Tensei 3. You just show Shin Megami Tensei. You start with Shin Megami Tensei 5 because that's the thing that everyone already knows is coming. You show 3 and people are like losing their minds, being like, oh, that was the one more thing. And then you're like, no, one more thing. Cadence of Hyrule is getting DLC and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that would have been the best way to handle it. Yeah, I agree with that.
But instead, they're just like this nebulous. They know that people want a Nintendo Direct, quote unquote. And so they just throw out the nebulous words because they don't mean anything anymore. Nintendo Direct. And they're just like, okay, everyone's going to watch this thing. We're going to get more eyes on this thing than if we message this thing as a Shin Megami Tensei Direct. And I just didn't appreciate it. But I agree with you. Like the Cadence of Hyrule stuff, man, I had to look up the developer, and I'm not familiar with them. In terms of like, I mean, I didn't really play Crypt of the Necro Dancer, but I assume that Crypt of the Necro Dancer and Cadence of Hyrule are like their only two like major successes. But like, whoever they are, like Nintendo is letting them get away with like basically in a good way, but letting them get away with murder in a way that they don't let their own internal developers do. And don't let any other third party that I've seen do. And I think it's wild because they have taken now what is, if you like do that mode in Cadence of Hyrule where you turn off the rhythm based stuff and you just play it like a normal 2D Zelda game, there is now a competent 2D Zelda game that is getting story DLC. And that's never happened with first party Zelda before. And I don't understand why. Because imagine if you go back to something like, Link Between Worlds, and you give that game like full-on story DLC, or like Link to the Past, or Oracle of Seasons, or like any of those games, you give those games DLC, like games that people love, and they would have just paid for more of. Like, why doesn't Nintendo just do that? Like, why does it take a third party making a Zelda game to be like, yeah, actually DLC, like substantial DLC for like these little 2D games would be a good idea. And furthermore, maybe we should just make more 2D games every once in a while, because like not everything needs to be a Breath of the Wild. Not everything needs to be a Metroid Prime 4. Like, why can't you make more Metroid Return of Samus's every once in a while and Link Between Worlds? Like, people obviously really like those games. I don't know. Like, that's my rant. Like, I just wish that, like, every once in a while, Nintendo would be like, man, like, we should...
The world needs more Zelda games. There's no... I don't think there's anybody that'll say no to that, so...
Yeah, I mean, but specifically more 2D Zelda games.
Yeah, 2D stuff, more DLC. I mean, yeah, if you have something that you spent this much time on, and you know that you're going to create something similar to it in the future, why not just work on a content pack? Like, sure, just work on something. Even if it just adds a little bit to the story, it gives the reason to dive back in, experience the world, love what you played, remember all the good experiences, and then it just makes you appreciate that series that much more. And, right, and I totally get what you're saying about that. I wholeheartedly agree. But yeah, again, Cadence of Hyrule really scratched that Link to the Past itch for me. I loved the way that they handled like the inventory and everything like that as well. And I was playing that game when it first came out, so for it to really appease me and wanting more of that original style, even though it was a roguelike kind of scenario, it did such a good job. I can't give it enough praise. Like, and when I was playing on it, playing the game, I was playing, we were on vacation in an RV, and that was like really the only game I was playing. And I just got to sort of go in the back, throw some headphones on, and just jam with it while we were, you know, trekking from here to there. And it just made it such a memorable experience for me, just to have that to sort of escape to instead of dealing with just watching trees go by.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. We spent so much time talking about Nintendo, their tiny little thing that we haven't even got to Microsoft yet. Real quick, Chelsea, do you have any thoughts regarding anything that Nintendo's been doing lately?
No. They haven't released a Bugsnax for you to play over and over again, so I have nothing memorable from it for me. It's also just, there's not really any games they did that necessarily, like, stood out to me or really grabbed my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up playing Zelda, so that stuff isn't, I don't have as much nostalgia attached to a lot of Nintendo's, like, main event stuff. Because I didn't grow up playing Zelda, and I only grew up playing one of the Mario games, and that was when it was still a 2D platformer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for someone who is very annoyed with Bugsnax right now, you're starting to become the world's most foremost expert on Bugsnax. I'm just saying. A lot of your contributions...
Yeah, second to you.
I know, but I'm just saying, we're gonna have to check in with you apparently every week regarding Bugsnax.
And I'll try playing
Bugsnax alerts.
Bugsnax alerts. I mean, I already am signed up for those on my phone. It's like
life. Call the Bugsnax bites.
Yes.
Oh no.
Yes.
That's a good one. Bugsnax bites.
Bugsnax news every single week. There has to be a segment.
Once it comes out, it's just a gif of someone eating a different animal.
Right. We can call it talking about Bugsnax.
We could just not talk about it.
Talking about Bugsnax.
And then they inevitably take the footage of somebody playing the game and put screams over it every time they like eat one of the creatures.
Right.
Exactly. This game has serious like
the nightmare. Wilhelm scream.
Let's just talk about the Microsoft stuff, and then we can get out of here. They, as you're aware, we had a Microsoft Xbox Games Showcase on July 23rd, which they showed a lot of things, but the kind of the focal point of the whole thing was the enticement was that there was going to be gameplay shown of Halo Infinite. which they did show, and we'll get into it, but it looks maybe a little bit undercooked right now, but we'll cross our fingers on that one. They also showed a next-gen Forza game, which, big surprise, Microsoft has like three franchises, so obviously they're going to have a Forza game. They showed Everwild, which we kind of discussed a little bit before. They'd already shown a little bit of Everwild, I think, and kind of talked about it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's a Rareware game. Looks like it's continuing that art style slash tradition of what they did with Sea of Thieves, rather than like a return to what old Rare used to be, which, to be fair, like, new Rare doesn't even have any of the same employees as old Rare. So Rare is just Rare in name, unfortunately, at this point. But then you also got State of Decay 3 coming from Undead Labs. You got, apparently, and I guess I missed this, but apparently Obsidian showed a new game called Avowed.
Yeah.
And then they also showed DLC for The Outer Worlds coming in September. There's a game called Tell Me Why from Dontnod, who made Life is Strange, which I'm a pretty big fan of. They showed... Oh, I mean, I won't get into that yet, because the big thing they left for the end, but they showed a new Tetris Effect game, which I was kind of surprised about, because it doesn't look like it's exactly just Tetris Effect, but on Xbox it looks like maybe it's a little bit more than that. There was As Dusk Falls, a Quantic Dream game apparently, or I guess it wasn't a Quantic Dream game, but it looks like a lot of people from old Quantic Dream are working on it. Stalker 2, which I don't have any affinity for Stalker, but sure. There was a Warhammer game, apparently. I mean, I saw that trailer. It was a lot of CG trailers coming out of this thing. There was Dragon Quest XI S Definitive Edition is coming to Xbox. I think it's coming to Xbox Game Pass, but it's coming to, obviously, Xbox One. And I think Xbox One or Xbox Series X. And then there is Balan Wonderworld, which was shown as a pre-event thing, which is from Yuji Naka, the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog, which is probably my most anticipated thing. But yeah, then the one more thing is they finally showed us that new Fable game from Playground Studios, which I believe is the developer of Forza Horizon, right? Or like one of the Forza games I think Playground Studios made, and now they're working on a Fable game. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot in there, but overall, I thought Microsoft did a pretty solid job. They didn't do some of the things that I would have hoped they would do, but they did okay. You know, they finally showed us the Fable game that people have been talking about for like 2-3 years now. And there were some cool games, I guess. I don't know that it was necessarily as good as what Sony did, but they got that Halo.
I know I'm usually the one that talks up first, but I wanted to pass over to Will to see what he was thinking about it, because I know we had talked about it a little bit before we started recording this. Will, what did you think of what you saw from the Xbox stuff?
I feel like they kind of struggle because they don't have all the first party that Nintendo and Sony has, so it's difficult for them to showcase so much. Whereas you get to like EA and Ubisoft, like, they're gonna have a lot of those cross-platform games or cross-party. You know what I'm talking about. They're going to have all the sports games and the ones that you can play on multiple platforms, Call of Duty, everything. So I thought Halo, obviously I pretty much watched for like Halo, and I'm not an Xbox person per se. So for me, it's probably going to come down to multiplayer for Halo, but it did look a little kind of strange graphically. I'm kind of a sucker for like bright colors though. So, you know, when they like kind of turn up the, saturation kind of makes me more appealed than like the grittier that they're going for in 4 and 5. But besides that, I don't know. I'll probably like jump in, like take a peek at those titles when they release, but I'm not going to be super invested.
Did you feel like there was any particular reason for you to go get an Xbox Series X?
Honestly, for me, like it's just going to come down to like if Halo's multiplayer is something that myself and a bunch of friends can get on, I'll probably buy it for that. But if not, then I'll be totally satisfied with PS5 and those titles. I'm more of like, I'll only play like single player games unless there's like one that I can get on with a bunch of people, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, for me, knowing that Halo was also going to be released on Xbox One and PC with it already, that you can already wishlist it on Steam, it really makes me wonder what their end strategy is, because it seems like they're going to this ecosystem where, I don't know, they're cutting off their nose to spite their face, all that fun sayings that you can do with, but like the idea that Game Pass offers everything that was shown in that showcase, it's like, I'm not going to buy $60 games anymore. I can literally just spend a month playing pretty much every single title that they showed and get my fill of it for what, $15 or something? It's ridiculous. I don't understand how they expect to make money at this point doing that. I think that's the biggest takeaway from this whole thing, is that they're like, every single one of these titles are going to be on Game Pass. I'm like, how do you make money? How do you help these developers make the money that they want to make? I mean, I guess I understand the subscription model. I'm sure it's been successful for them so far. But at the end of the day, if you're offering on PC, you're not getting the hardware sales anymore. If somebody can go and just play Halo Infinite on Steam, you're not getting an Xbox Series X sale. So I don't really understand what they're trying to do with that. Talking about Fable, I mean, it was just a teaser. I'm excited because I loved the Fable games, but beyond that, it was just sort of like a, hey, here it is kind of thing. The Tetris Effect connected multiplayer game, it sort of ticks me off because I know this is something that they started developing for Xbox, and I don't understand why, when they'd already released on PlayStation 4 first, and they had the PlayStation VR version, which was amazing, and then they came out with the Oculus Quest version, and the Oculus, I think it was on Steam, or it's also on Epic Games, or whatever it's on, they have the VR version for it, and they're just specifically doing this as what they call a console exclusive or whatever, like a timed exclusive or whatever. I don't understand it. Like, these are the people that are already bought in on your game. It's going to eventually be a free DLC, or maybe it's a paid DLC. I'm pretty sure it's going to be free. For the people that already bought in and played your game and made your game a success, you're going to snub them and say, here, we're going to throw this multiplayer game that people begged for on Xbox instead. That just makes me feel sort of have a bad taste in my mouth for the game, even though I love it so much. It makes me wonder what the heck the developers were thinking. And I'm guessing it's just they offered them money. They're like, hey, we're the only platform that does not have Tetris Effect. What can you do for us? And they said, oh, well, we'll take the additional like modes and stuff that they have built into the game and turn it into a multiplayer mode and give it the ability to play local and online multiplayer. And that's really what everybody was begging for as soon as the game came out. And naturally they bring it to Xbox. I don't really get that at all. I think that sort of sucks, but
Sure, that's traditionally like Microsoft's whole big thing, right? Is like, even though they just recently purchased some studios, like in the past, kind of their whole big thing has been to just kind of like buy timed exclusives and stuff like that. That's what they used to do when in the
Xbox. Throw money around instead of throwing talent around. I don't get that. I don't think that's an appropriate way to handle the game industry. I feel like it's actually going to do more harm than good. It's basically just giving the ability to make money control what happens in the industry. And I know that's obviously something that everybody wants as a game developer. They obviously want to their games to be successful and get all that money from it, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're just going around purchasing a bunch of studios because you've seen them work well on a different platform, that's a really crappy take. That's a really crappy way to handle it. And I feel like a lot of the studios that they showcased and said, these are all our partners, I'm pretty sure a lot of those were missing from the showcase that they had for the Xbox game showcase. I did want to talk about one more game that really surprised me, and I now looking up some additional information, I understand why. The Gunk from the creators of the SteamWorld franchise.
Oh yeah,
it looked so cool. It reminded me of Blinks from Xbox that had like a really cool mechanic that seemed ahead of its time, where it had the vacuum and the time manipulation and stuff like that. Blinks the Time Sweeper, back from the original Xbox, released in 2004. This game just makes me think Luigi's Mansion. It makes me think of, like I said, Blinks. It's just really cool looking, and I really enjoy the style. I'm really interested to see what they do with the game. It's very colorful. It's somewhat Journey to the Savage Planet, in style of like this alien landscape with all this foliage and everything like that. But I was really intrigued by that. I thought it looked amazing.
Right. Yeah. And I skipped over that one. I didn't even, I looked at the trailer, and I'm obviously the SteamWorld developers do some insane things. It seems like a lot of their stuff is heavily inspired by those old, like Oddworld games, which I really dig. I can't imagine a better pairing when you think about original Xbox and the games that were coming out back then. You know, your Blinks, your Oddworld. I think Oddworld Munch's Odyssey was like a launch game for the original Xbox. You know, like that's what I associate with the Xbox brand. So the idea that's the type of game
coming back.
Yeah, I'm
seeing that come back is sort of cool.
Sure, absolutely. I don't know. In terms of the Tetris stuff, or more so, I guess with what you were talking about with like Game Pass and everything, I think it's super cool what they're doing with everything being available on Game Pass. I don't understand what the long-term business strategy is with that, because I feel like someone is losing money on that, right? Like, I don't know.
It's people getting into the ecosystem and then seeing other titles that aren't on Game Pass and saying, now I need to own these. I think that's the only way to make it work, because otherwise they're just giving away these $60 titles. Hundreds of them, they're giving them away for $15 a month. Like,
right.
That's not a working model to make money upon. Like, you can't just cut your profits to a quarter and then give somebody the opportunity to literally play through like a dozen single player games or more per month and somehow turn around and say, hey, look, we made a bunch of money though. I don't know where the money's coming from. I really don't. I don't see how that even works.
Well, I think the bigger problem where they're concerned is the idea that like that's kind of where it seems like a lot of their resources are going right now because of what you said. Like, yeah, let's get people into our ecosystem. But I don't think it's working because I think they're not actually doing like what you said and having the first party power that is bringing those exclusives to their console. Like, yeah, I mean, someone can potentially play the new Assassin's Creed game in its entirety for $15 a month. But is that really going to make me want to, I mean, as someone who did not have the Xbox One last generation at all, is that going to make me decide that I need to get both consoles when I can go over to Sony and play that exact same game, albeit, you know, for either $60 right up front or wait a few months and get it for 40? Probably not. So, like, I mean, Xbox Game Pass, amazing value. Everything I think that Microsoft is doing right now is super consumer friendly, but like,
to at a certain cost,
right? Yeah, at what at what cost, and also to a certain extent, like, to their own fault too, because it's consumer friendly also in the way that they are putting some of their games, like their Xbox games, on PC too. So like, if you're a PC gamer, there's no reason for you to really have
an Xbox console. Yeah, because yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could upgrade your current rig for less than the cost of the new console.
Right.
In a lot of situations, if you're like a current gen on the motherboard and chipset and RAM and stuff like that, you could go to a better graphics card or whatever it takes. Go sure. to a solid state drive, something like that. Some way to upgrade, and you're not going to pay the prices that they're asking for their new console. And so...
Right.
So far, I have absolutely not seen a reason to own an Xbox Series X. Not even a little bit.
No, no. I mean, I haven't really been enticed that I need to be there, at least on day one, either.
It's sad that it doesn't even seem like it's their goal. And you know they keep, you know, saying, this is why we're so much better than Sony. But Sony's delivering the games. They have right. these exclusives. They have, what, like 12 console exclusives that are PlayStation 5 exclusives that look amazing. And right. I don't see that at all with Xbox, and I don't even understand what their goal is with neither their new system and with the Game Pass idea. I mean, I love that they have Game Pass. Don't get me wrong, as a consumer, it's great. But wondering also as a game developer how the heck they're going to make money, I don't even get what the prospect is.
No, I don't either. Chelsea, Alberto, what did you think?
As far as the whole thing is concerned, I think Grounded looks pretty charming. The little game where you end up the size of an ant. And it looks like it's got some like mechanics where you're building, you know, a fort and a place to live, and you have to find either friendly or aggro bugs and either befriend them or fight them. I think the Medium looks kind of interesting. I don't know if I believe
Silent Hill, man. Like, well, it's, yeah, that's what it reminded me of instantly.
Yeah, yeah, but, and it's even got the same composer from Silent Hill. But right. I don't know if I believe all the hype around, like, I was reading their blog post about it. I don't know if I believe the hype that's like, this game wasn't possible before the next generation hardware. And I'm like, I haven't really seen anything that makes you revolutionary, like in the way that, say, VR was. So
yeah,
I don't know if I believe that.
I believe it, but not in the way that they're probably making you
That's
think.
What I mean. Like, because the way they're hyping it up is...
Well, probably the thing is when they're saying, like, this wasn't possible on the last generation, what I'm assuming they're probably referring to is stuff like HDR and like ray tracing and stuff like
that. I think they were talking about the fact that they have two simultaneous worlds running at the same time is really what they were alluding to, is that they're saying that this isn't possible with the current system. But I've seen so many things done with the current gen, I don't even, like she said, I don't believe that to be true.
Like, it also comes down to what exactly does it look like to have two worlds going at the same time? Are you talking about like what we've seen a lot of games do before, like We Happy Few, where it's you're going back and forth? Is it going to be like you see just one world in front of you, and sometimes it looks more sinister and sometimes it doesn't, but it keeps the same like shapes and stuff in it? So that's why I'm sort of suspicious there, is because I don't think
they've really showed like they unroll the world.
That, yeah.
Yeah, like how you switch between the two, how it like comes into play. I mean, if they legitimately have like the entire world roll out from underneath where you're currently roaming, if you do something that you're not supposed to, or you get in a predicament where like this creature now knows that you're there, then I think that's awesome. But is it like requiring that much power? I don't know. I personally don't know. I don't think so.
I really don't. I think there's plenty of trickery out there that could pull something like that off.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, it looks super interesting. And if anyone who's ever been involved in a Quantic Dream game is working on that game, you already know that it's going to be kind of a mindfuck, frankly, in terms of like the random ethereal, like magical things that they could potentially do with that game. And hearing the Silent Hill comparison definitely has me intrigued. But yeah, I mean, what was it? Was it like those two, or were there other things that like that you really liked from the conference?
Well, I mean, there's also Watch Dogs Legion, which, you know, somehow incidentally became just a retelling of current events. So right. that caught my attention.
Well, yeah, and of course, you know, we're not even going over the Ubisoft Forward press conference, which went over Watch Dogs Legion in a little bit more detail. I don't recall did they do something at the Xbox press conference? I don't recall, but they probably did. But
I don't remember. I just remember watching the trailer with you.
Sure, yeah, because at Ubisoft Forward they showed that very uncomfortable, given the current state of the world, trailer for Watch Dogs Legion, and I mean I know this sounds weird because I don't know what kind of how I should feel about Watch Dogs Legion right now, given the messaging behind it. It's either blissfully unaware of the world we're living in right now or knows exactly the world we're living in right now. Given how out of touch Ubisoft has been in the past, I want to say they're blissfully unaware of the fact.
I don't know. I mean, did you play Watch Dogs 2?
I didn't.
What they had, there's a part in Watch Dogs 2 that they have a pharmaceutical company, and they're charging an exorbitant amount for, gosh, I probably just need to look it up. There's a reference to the guy that got what was it?
Pirelli.
Yeah. It was just like almost a direct reference to the whole scenario. And there's an actual mission that involves you like taking him down. Like, it's ridiculous. They know exactly what they're doing. I have 100%. I have confidence in that fact that they know exactly what they're doing.
Well, and Watch Dogs' theme and aesthetic has always seemed to be like technology taken to its like fascist extreme. And yeah. So whether they were anticipating it or not, they just happened to follow the thread that a lot of politics has now followed. Technology being used for like authoritarian reasons.
Sure.
And so there's only so many directions you can take that and not intersect with real life if real life's going the same direction.
No, you're right. So I guess what I'll say though is that like assuming that Ubisoft believes that what they are doing in making a game that has so many parallels to the world we're currently living in is a good thing. I personally feel weird about it, but I'm like very much intrigued by Watch Dogs Legion, and really it's kind of like, I don't know how else to say this, but it's kind of like the game I want to play most right now, more than anything.
Feel like you're actually in control of an otherwise uncontrollable situation that you feel so helpless in. You know, in this world, it's like we don't feel like we can really change much of anything anymore. It seems like everything's determined by people that are older than us and that have just somehow bought their way into the situation where they are currently and are changing our lives for the worse, and we literally can't do anything about it. And at least in that situation, you can, you know, turn on a controller, turn on a system, turn on your computer, and play a game and actually do something about it, even if it's like all the craziness that is offered to you. That's sort of like a sick fantasy that works with the world that we're living in right now.
Sure, absolutely. That's kind of how I feel about it. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. That's definitely something that I'm super looking forward to. Anything else, Chels?
No, those were the main three that I noticed.
Okay. And Will, you kind of you touched on a few things earlier, but is there anything else that really stood out to you either from Microsoft or Ubisoft?
No, that was pretty much all. I kind of caught on the way. I didn't watch the whole things, but I was just kind of observing as updates came in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And then of course we didn't really talk about it very much, but I guess the last thing I'll say, because we kind of went over, well, okay. So overall, how did y'all feel about Microsoft, I guess, in comparison to Sony?
Like score wise, you mean? Like an A through F?
You don't have to necessarily give it a score, but like, I mean, which got you more excited?
Definitely Sony.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was pretty obvious, but yeah, Sony has me more excited for their games because that's just who they are. I mean, I feel like they have stronger exclusives, just bar sure. none. I even feel like Nintendo has a hard time catching up to their exclusives now, is that everybody wants that fidelity, everybody wants that engrossing story, and Nintendo is still pushing the same Mario games and the same sports titles and the same, like, I mean, every once in a while they come up with something unique, like a Ring Fit Adventure or whatever, but for the most part, they're just shelling out the franchises they know and not giving us the ones we want. Cough, cough.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the actual problem for me personally, is not so much the graphical fidelity aspect, but just the, you have all these franchises that you could be using right now, and you're not. And I think the biggest problem maybe is that they haven't made good on the ones that they already announced, in terms of like Metroid being the big one. But like, also, I mean, come on, like, I know people love Breath of the Wild, and I'm not saying like cancel Breath of the Wild 2 or anything like that. But frankly, I would have rather seen like a new, good, proper Star Fox game or an F-Zero game, or I don't know, I'm trying to like look at my shelf and like think of something else, like just one of the other big like first party Nintendo things that they like, hell, like another Kid Icarus game. Like where's Kid Icarus? Like
It did so well, and it was so good.
Yeah, I know that Sakurai's busy, but like, dude, just like find a way to make Kid Icarus Uprising only use one screen and port that to Switch somehow, and I guarantee you Kid Icarus gets like this wild like revival by being on the Switch alone, in the same way that like a lot of people got to play Wonderful 101 that didn't because it
well,
was
yeah, I want to play the multiplayer again. I would totally play the multiplayer with the upgraded graphics and everything. Like, right. I really enjoy that. I play that all the time. I mean, that was one of the reasons I think I originally met you, is because I was playing multiplayer for Kid Icarus. Sure. When we were meeting up for our 3DS Street Pass groups.
Right.
And yeah, no, I feel like they're sitting on all these franchises and they just let them go, and they keep just dishing out stuff. Like, even though I enjoy this Paper Mario, it's not what the fans want.
Right.
There's no way that's what they were looking for. They want a throwback to the original two games that made this series worth it. The original and Thousand Year Door. And like, they're just not doing that. It's all like one gimmick, and that's what they keep using over and over again, instead of the craziness that was Thousand Year Door. It's like, I don't know. I don't understand why they keep doing this.
I don't know. But hey, there's always next year or next week when there'll be a new Nintendo Direct rumor, and I'm sure we'll get Kid Icarus and F-Zero. And all those games will be announced between
Metroid Prime 5. I mean,
and Metroid
that's what
Prime
I'm holding
5.
Out for.
Metroid Prime 5, absolutely. They'll all be announced before the time that we all get together again and have another one of these shows. But I think that's probably where we should wrap it up. Just we've been going for a while. But everyone, I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank everyone for listening to the first ever episode of the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones. And Brian Taylor, you got anything you want to plug? Where can people find you or read your stuff or check you out?
Hopefully they can't. I've been working pretty hard on that.
Okay, fair.
No. I mean, I haven't really been doing too much as far as the game design stuff lately, but I did recently do a game jam called the No Code Jam, which was pretty cool because it's basically like there's a lot of solutions out there that game developers can use that doesn't require you to actually write a single line of code. And what we were working on was a choose your own adventure D&D campaign, sort of like the old adventure books, the choose your own adventure type, and just do some like basic graphics and stuff and just make it so you could choose your own stuff. And it turns out that the programmer we were using, I know I say programmer, but the programmer we were using ended up completely bailing on us the last day, literally in the last hour, and we never got to submit anything. So I'm actually currently in another game jam right now called the I Can't Write But Want to Tell a Story Jam. And so it's basically just trying to create a game that tells a really cool, like, interactive fiction, visual novel, narrative game kind of thing. And doesn't really focus too much on graphics and whatnot. Just tries to tell a decent story that's engaging. Or whatever you want to do. The theme is Lost. And I already have an idea for a story. And I have a guy that I'm working with on some graphics. And we're going to make a Game Boy game. So there's actually this program called GB Studio, it stands for Game Boy Studio, if you didn't figure that out, that lets you make actual Game Boy ROMs. And wow, you could take that with a flash cart and put it into your Game Boy and play it, or your Game Boy Color and play it. But it also lets you spit out an HTML file that lets you upload it to like a website or something. I'm sure you can just put it directly onto itch.io, which is the one that runs all these game jams. But that's what we're going to use, or we're going to try to use. I never used it before, but I'm interested in doing that because I love the Game Boy so much and figured it would be a cool place to start. So,
yeah, well, so if you get a working build of that, you should definitely send it my way. I would be interested to try it just because I have on my Game Boy Micro a Game Boy emulator, and it'd be super cool to just be able to like try and play your game on
that would be really neat.
Hardware. Yeah,
yeah,
that'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, so like, is there anywhere that anyone can get, like, is there a URL that people can like find your progress on it, or how can they get updates on that?
Well, we haven't really posted anything because in any of the jams they have like a page for the community and whatnot. You can go in there and, you know, it's just like a forum of people like showing off their work and stuff. We just started today, so we just sort of got the story idea and sort of mapped out a little bit of what we want to do with the game. And it's sort of funny because I just took a pencil and just drew on a sheet of paper like Game Boy screen layouts of what I want to do with the game, which is something I've never done before. So that was sort of interesting. But as far as something to follow yet, I don't really have anything. But next week, because ends. I'm trying to look at it right now. It ends August 10th. So I have a while to work
on it. Okay. So we'll just check in with you next time then.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then, Chels, do you have anything that you want to plug? Anything you're working on or anything?
Not really. I'm just kind of a random human.
So. Okay, that's fair. We're all just kind of random humans.
Yeah. Living that NPC life.
Yeah. Okay, so last and also least, Will Coleman. I love you, Will. I'm sorry.
Sitting in the
not responding,
too, right?
I have nothing to say.
You don't got anything to plug, Will?
Because one, I don't have anything to plug, and two, I'm mad. So.
Okay, well, I love you, Will. I'm sorry. just kidding. But ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions for us for the next time we convene, please send them in at the following email address: vgpresident2038@gmail.com. vgpresident2038@gmail.com, or leave your comments and questions down below, and we will try to get to them the next time we are together. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones. I'm Alex Rigsby. We have Brian Taylor, Will Coleman, and Chelsea Alberta. Thank you so much for watching and for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.